So I got to tell you, dude, we are in full on, like, the level of manga obsession at my house right now is just, well, it's off the charts.
God, I'm so jealous.
I mean, it's like every single night, both of my kids are just like.
Jane, reading. Too?
Oh, yeah, dude.
Wow.
She read all of the entire Dragon Ball Z series. It's like 26 volumes.
Oh, my gosh.
And now we're getting into like a new series that. Man, we've only got the first book.
Chainsaw Man.
No. See, that's the thing about manga is.
Hey, pals, welcome back to your favorite podcast, That Would Be Rad, the podcast that majors in 80s and 90s nostalgia, comic culture, all things paranormal, and minors in retro video games, tabletop RPGs, manga, pre-internet mysteries, and raising our kids to be half as cool as we were back in the 80s. I'm your host, Tyler Bentz, and this is your other host,
Woody Brown.
Hey, pal.
I mean, I guess they really do, when they say the third time's the charm.
It was, yeah.
They really mean it, you know? Boy.
Man, it's been a long time since I've, like, just straight up messed up on the intro.
Well, has it, though?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure you do every week.
But that's, well, I mean, the breath thing, that's a different story. That's,
yeah. Well, that got me last mm-hmm. week. I mean, that was, you know, gosh. Again, thanks to all our listeners who have given us so much love and support over the past couple weeks. And
oh, yeah.
Well, just keep on returning back for more, because last week's episode was definitely run and gun, and mm-hmm. I can't believe we knocked it out so quickly.
Oh, I can't.
And
I mean, it was just going to be like a, hey, this is your pals Woody and Tyler, and we're just touching base for like 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we kind of pulled it out.
Yeah, and I mean, like, we kind of briefly, I think I briefly mentioned this like in the thing, but I don't think I illustrated it like I wanted to, and that is, like, one of the things that I kind of talked about last week was how, like, everybody kind of goes through stuff in life, you mm-hmm. know, and finding whatever it is that you love that will kind of, like, either help distract you or just help you, like, process or deal with it or whatever is so healthy. And for me, and I think you too, just being able to hop on the mic, talk to one another, talk mm-hmm. to you, the listener, mm-hmm. boy, it's therapeutic. I mean, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, especially like, you know, I mean, we're not like a massive podcast yet, but, you know, our loyal listeners are like sort of true blue, like folks that like are coming back every single week to listen to the podcast. Like just seeing, like, for example, like when I didn't even post this on the podcast page, but just on my personal site, you know, we got into it all in the last episode, but you know, when my daughter was having like issues, it was just like bam, 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 bam. All of these like these folks that are, you know, fans and listeners, like, were just reaching out with like, you know, so much kindness. And it feels good to know that, like, for all the massive amount of work that like we put into this, that like it kind of comes back, you know?
Yeah, for sure, cool. Man. It's awesome. Okay, man. So this week it's kind of my turn, I thought, to mm-hmm. kind of bring something that maybe you hadn't heard of before, and maybe our listeners haven't heard of before. And you know, I do love an obscure story.
Oh, yeah.
From around the globe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're down, let me go ahead and get this puppy started.
Let's get into it.
First, I have a question for you,
okay,
Tyler. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of the Bukit Timah Monkey Man?
Well, it's a weird question. The reason that I'm sort of taking a long time is the Bukit Timah part, absolutely not. But I do feel like the term Monkey Man, I feel like that's sort of
a little bit of a synonymous term.
Yeah, like a colloquialism that, yeah, like you'll see in your more like primitive areas,
yeah,
or,
yep,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like I feel like there's like a, maybe like a,
It's almost like you can immediately like picture that in your mind, a little bit of a difference between, you know, a creature that is described as Monkey Man and say Bigfoot.
Yes.
You
yes.
know,
yeah.
there's a mental sort of visual difference there. And it's interesting that you said that that's relatively more common with sort of a more primitive setting and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today's story takes us all the way across the pond, if you will, long pond, to the Bukit Timah Nature Reserve in Singapore.
Oh, cool.
So before we get into this quote-unquote monkey man, first let me give the listener a little bit of context about Singapore in general, just in case they don't know much about it and why in the world it would be significant to me.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, folks, especially if you're a new listener, you might not know this, but I was actually born overseas. You guessed it, in Singapore. And because of my dad's job, we lived overseas off and on throughout my early childhood, but then more semi-permanently all through sort of grade school up until about eighth, almost ninth grade.
Mm-hmm.
There's just like some of the cool and rad sort of facts and trivia about Singapore, I think that some people may know, but mostly they don't. Because when you think of Singapore, you think of what?
Like pretty busy, I mean, I guess sort of a city type setting, but like kind of nuts a little bit.
Well, so whenever I came back to the States and I was in school and people would be like, you know, where were you born? Or and if I said anything about Singapore at that time, they would say, oh, you mean like where people like, if you get in trouble, they're like super strict and you get caned.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And so that was like the first thing that people thought of when I came back and kind of explained where I used to live.
Yeah. And that would be from like if you like spit your like gum on the ground.
Well, gum is illegal in the country and we'll get there. So let me just say this. Singapore is, well, it's like extremely vibrant, bustling. I mean, I would almost say like it's just like this insane metropolis. I mean, like
I just picture like crazy like street markets everywhere.
You know, it's funny, like yes, there are amazing markets, but again, it is the cleanest place I've ever been to. The buildings are just like the architecture and the art and everything is just beautiful.
But didn't they get, and I don't mean to like derail you, but didn't it used to be a lot like crazier and then they got like a new leader that, yes, he sort of imposed these super strict laws, but then like, but it did actually like clean up and make everything
yeah,
better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the long-term history of it, but all I know is from about the time that I was born until like now, it's always been like very strict, but extremely like, it's one of the safest cities in the world.
Yeah.
It's one of the cleanest cities in the world.
I think that's a fairly new thing though. I mean, new as in like 40
plus years.
Yeah.
So let me talk about where it's located. And this is part of like kind of what makes it unique. So it's actually an island city state. It's located at the southern tip of the Malay Peninsula.
Oh, here we go.
Good luck. I'm not keeping that in there. The southern tip of the Malay Peninsula. Still sounding weird.
You better put it in there.
Peninsula. I'm not doing it.
Hold I won't listen. Because you leave in every mistake that I have ever
That's
made.
That's not true. That's not true. And it's in Southeast Asia. Basically, if you're looking at a map, okay, and you find Malaysia, it's at the very southern tip, and it's separated by this like small strait called the Johor Strait. And that right there, that little island, is Singapore. But despite its small sort of geographical size, it is one of the most prosperous modern cities in the world.
Wow.
Here's something else that's cool. It's both a city and a country.
Yeah, that's why I was kind of having a hard time explaining it because I don't, when I say city, I don't think of like high rises and stuff, but I mean, I'm sure they have that.
Yeah, that's the majority of it. See,
weird.
And this is great because like, it's interesting that that's what you think of. I think generally, and it's hard for me to kind of look at it through the lens.
I'm thinking of like 80s movies.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I mean, even then, man, I mean, like, the downtown areas of a lot of, like, Asian countries and capitals, you know, like Bangkok or Jakarta or, you know, most of those are just very dense in terms of population,
oh, yeah.
large sky rises, you know, all this stuff. And then as you kind of move further out,
there's like a
cliff. It just drops in terms of like, now you're looking at like small little huts. I mean,
yeah.
Singapore is not like that in terms of it being even remotely third world, but Jakarta, for example, mm-hmm. absolutely is like that.
And so, and how far from each other would like Jakarta be from Singapore?
Yeah, I don't know the exact mileage, but it's really close. I mean, a plane okay. ride is probably like 30 minutes, 40 minutes, you know, just mm-hmm. up in the air, and then almost immediately when you get to cruising altitude, you're coming back down to land. So very mm-hmm. very quick. Yeah. So again, it's both a city and a country, mm-hmm. and I mean, often referred to as like a city state. And you know, I didn't really know. Well, let me give you some dimensions here. So the land area itself is just over 270 square miles or 700 square kilometers for our international listeners mm-hmm. using the metric system. And it has a population of about 5.7 million people.
Wow.
And so one of the things that I wondered when I first kind of landed on this topic idea was, you know, something I never really thought about and or looked up was, are there other city-states like this? I mean, I couldn't think of any. And the ones that I found were basically Monaco and Vatican City.
Hmm.
But it's interesting because Vatican City is, you know, it's landlocked, so to speak. It's just a small area.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no really, like, the answer to the ultimate question is there's no other sort of sovereign city-states like Singapore, meaning that
oh wow,
they're countries that are entirely
it's
comprised
own.
Of a single city. Yeah.
So,
it's
so
very
you're
unique
saying
in that way.
It is like Vatican City in that
well,
way?
Well, all I know is what I found, there's not a country that is just comprised of a single city. So whereas like right. Vatican City, yeah, it has its sort of own ruling government and, you know, that kind of thing, but it's within a bigger country. Singapore is not only separated
geographically,
by land,
yeah.
Yeah, geographically, but also just it's everything. It's a city. It's a country. It's an island. It's very unique.
I didn't know any of that. That's
well,
cool.
That's why I'm bringing it up, pal.
Hey, thank you.
It's often referred to as the Lion City. And when you Google like Singapore, one of the things that comes up is this really cool, it's what I think of when I think of Singapore. There's this like fountain that you'll see, and it's like a fish body with like a lion head, and it's like the water's coming out of it. And it's like the lionfish or whatever.
Mm.
It's kind of like their sort of symbol or whatever.
So not like an actual lionfish, but like
no,
it's
yeah,
just
yeah,
called
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm. And you know, so it's sometimes called Lion City because apparently, like the Sanskrit origin of the word Singapura, which means Lion City.
How did you just nail that pronunciation, but you failed miserably with peninsula?
Peninsula. Yeah, I don't know. Thanks, Val.
Peninsula.
I mean, there's all kinds of other, like, I don't know, trivia. I mean, yes, it's illegal to chew gum in Singapore. I remember one time we flew in, and I think we were coming back to Jakarta from, like, Christmas break in the States or something like that. And I had a pack of gum in my pocket. And I remember being so dang scared, realizing this once we landed. And I'm now, like, in the customs line. I'm like, oh, my God.
I mean, are we talking like at the airport, if you have gum, like
oh, yeah,
it's like
dude.
A,
yep.
Is it just
there's
like
a
in?
Sign, if I remember right now, it's been several years since I've been there, but I remember in my memory, there mm-hmm. being like a sign that's like gum is illegal in this country, you know, beyond this point, you'll get fined. So it's not like you're going to get arrested, but
oh,
you will, there's a fine for everything. If you don't, there's a sign at the toilets that says like, if you don't flush the toilet, it's like a, you know, $25 fine or whatever. Hmm. So, I mean, little things like that, if you litter, big time fines, you know?
Well, one of the cool things, and the reason that I brought that up earlier is I was just listening to a podcast that was kind of talking about this. And this is why I was saying that, like, I think
I
it's
am already.
I think it's like a fairly sort of newish kind of thing. But if one of the sort of decrees is like, if you're caught with drugs, and I don't know if it's like you're caught with drugs or you're caught like specifically like selling drugs.
Mm. Either way, you're still caught with them. But
you're immediately hanged.
Mm. See, like,
I don't
know.
Which has made it an almost completely like drugless society, is
I don't
amazing.
Know if it's like that quick. I'm sure you go to court, but yeah, you're probably, the sentence is probably hanging or caning or whatever.
Oh, no, it's immediate death.
In Singapore?
Mm-hmm. I literally just listened to a podcast about this.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, again, it is in the world, one of the safest cities in the world.
Yep.
It's lowest crime rate, you know, strict laws and heavy, heavy policing. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's also like a melting pot kind of a country because of its location, right? You've got like English, you know, as far as languages go, man, like, especially like overseas, almost everyone, you know, the international school that I went to, quick shout out to Jakarta International School, mm-hmm. which it's now called Jakarta Intercultural School. Almost every kid there spoke more than one language, you know. And so in Singapore, it actually has four official languages, English, Malay, Tamil, and Mandarin. And so you've got this like melting pot of cultures, Asian cultures, but also some European influence and stuff, especially because like the Dutch were real heavy. I mean, they, you know, basically ruled and controlled a lot of the Indonesian islands. You want to talk about food, man? Oh my gosh, dude. It is unbelievable. We would just walk around, go to these markets, get these just delicious foods. Mm-hmm. Like,
I'm all about that stuff.
Oh man, it's just so awesome. And it's cool because there's so many different influences, everything from Malaysian to Indian to Chinese. Mm-hmm. There's just any and all kind of foods you can kind of try out. But then there's also these really cool, more modern chefs that kind of fuse a lot of that stuff and then come up with these brand new creations that are just not only beautiful, but delicious. And it's just so cool, man.
That is cool. That's really cool.
Okay. So overall, yes, Singapore is like extremely unique. It is a bustling metropolis. It's also, you know, because of the...
Oh, here, real quick. Sorry to, sorry to derail you, but I just looked it up and just cannabis alone, possession of it, up to 10 years of imprisonment, and a $20,000 fine or both. If you're caught trafficking it or trying to export it, up to 500 grams, may face the death penalty.
Yeah, man.
And this is like lessened from what it was. It used to be immediately you were hanged in the...
Yeah. Wow. You know. I mean, it's one of those things where it all kind of sounds like intense, right?
But
the same time, it's like, there's a couple things. One, you kind of get nervous and you want to make sure you keep track of your luggage at all times.
Oh, yeah.
Someone accidentally slips it in your bag, next thing you know. I mean, what's that movie, dude? It's got like Claire Danes.
Oh, didn't it have Vince?
She had
like
the hot short hair. No, that's a different one. But that same kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay.
When it's called something like Triangle?
I don't know, man.
Not the Pink Triangle. That's a Weezer reference.
I gotta take this. Oh, gosh. So it's sprawling. It's busy. Mm-hmm. Think of it as like, you know, this metropolis, mm-hmm. very successful, expensive, very nice, clean, safe place. Something that I rarely thought about is that outside of that main area are these like lush rainforests.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they also have beautiful like gardens and stuff within the city. They're very sort of famous for their botanical gardens and stuff. And I've been to them a million times. But I never really, when I think of Singapore, I'd never think of, oh, like there's got to be, you know, a nature preserve that would facilitate the potential environment to house this cryptid creature.
Now we're talking.
Yeah. So when we get back from the break, we are going to dive into this monkey man.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
America's future can be determined by our dreams and our visions.
It was very intense, bright light.
For over 200 years, there have been reports of giant, man-like creatures.
From another dimension, another world, I don't know.
The most intriguing mystery on the North American continent.
This is Joshua Cutchin, and you're at my home for weirdness. That would be rad.
Yeah, it is weird, man, because I literally just heard about that, and I was like blown away. And I mean, even this stuff that I just read to you, this is like on their official, like, you know, website.
Yeah.
But it is pretty like funny because, like, even down to like the way they like explain it, it's like cannabis can affect concentration and memory, which weakens the abuser's ability to learn.
Yep.
So it's like saying like, hey, this is us helping you. Yeah, hey, right, man. Here, the Misuse of Drugs Act, and it changed over in 1973.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like from the 80s on,
yeah.
It was, you know, it's also an intense place. Like, well, an intense place. They have rules such as on your 18th birthday, if you're Singaporean,
you have to go out and fight a tiger.
No, you have to be in the military. You have to serve in the military.
Oh, that's
in
like,
fact,
what is it? Is not Israeli.
Maybe Israeli. I don't know.
Oh, I think it is Israeli, actually. Special Forces. Probably wrong.
Okay. Deep in the rainforest of Singapore, man, is where our episode takes us today. So, deep within lies an enigmatic creature that has been the subject of local legend for decades. We're talking about the Bukit Timah Monkey Man, also known as the Singapore Bigfoot.
Wow, cool.
So he's been described as a, you guessed it, bipedal primate that stands over 6 feet tall, covered in like a long grayish hair. And here's what's cool, man, possessing a pair of bright red eyes that glow in the dark.
Wow.
Now, the creature's origins are kind of shrouded in mystery, and some folks suggest that it might be a remnant of a long extinct ape species that once roamed the forests of Southeast Asia. Others claim that it is a product, and here's where I thought, like, ooh, yeah, this is really more of our speed, and I knew you'd like this, a product of genetic experimentation or a supernatural being that inhabits the wilderness. Mm,
yeah.
So some of the first sightings of the Bukit Timah Monkey Man were reported in the 1950s, with a witness describing a large ape-like creature that was seen roaming the dense forests around Bukit Timah Hill. Over the years, there have been sporadic reports of sightings, with some even claiming to have seen the creature in the daytime. Mm. But mostly, others insist that it really appears at night. One of the most famous ones, of course, occurred in the late 80s when a group of teenagers hiking in the nature reserve stumbled upon the creature. Now, I'm actually going to read some of the firsthand accounts as given from a bunch of folks that were originally printed in Singapore's first English language newspaper called The New Paper. Nice. I didn't get super creative with the title, but it kind of just lets you know what it is. And I like that, you know, they cut to the chase pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Now the new paper didn't come out until 1988, but check out some of these reports. This comes from a 48-year-old taxi driver called Saren Goon. All right. And this is what he says. When driving my taxi past the fire station on Upper Bukit Timah Road in the middle of the night, I hit what I thought was a child that ran out in the middle of the road. It was on the car bonnet. Little side note, in case our American listeners don't know what a bonnet is, they're referring to the hood of the car.
Hmm.
Jumping back in.
Yep.
It was on the car bonnet, and then it snarled at me. It was like a monkey, but so big. It ran off injured, covered in blood, and holding its arm, which was broken. The next report comes from a 29-year-old housewife, cool description, who said, I was going to the bus stop early one morning to catch the 171 bus. It was very foggy and cold. I thought I saw a tramp going through the rubbish bin. However, when I approached, it called out with a loud animal sound and ran back into the forest. It was gray, hairy, and ran on two legs, but had a monkey's face. I was shivering with fear and called the police, but to no avail. It's funny with some of these, you know, you can tell that that 1988 English translation was more tramp. Of like a European, yeah, a tramp going through the rubbish bin.
Yeah.
All right. This one comes from a 65-year-old retiree. And he recalled this creature being talked about from his childhood. He says, "We were always told as children when in the Kampung not to go near the forest at night due to the monkey man. Of course, we never saw it ourselves, but it was always some uncle or friend of the family who'd seen it. Once we were shown these footprints near the forest road, and I remember the strong urine smell. Whenever we heard shrieks coming from the jungle, we would tell each other, 'Don't disturb the monkey man.'" Now, despite numerous sightings and reports of the creature, there, you know, like most of these things, there have been no concrete evidence to prove its existence. However, obviously, this wouldn't stop locals and tourists trying to find and catch a glimpse of this elusive creature. And the Bukit Timah Nature Reserve, where the monkey man is said to inhabit, attracts thousands of visitors every year who want to kind of explore the lush rainforest and perhaps encounter this legendary creature. It's a 164-acre park located just a few kilometers from the downtown area of Singapore. And it's got such a diverse range of flora and fauna and stuff. And I think they said like over 800 species of plants and over 500 species of animals and almost 200 species of birds. I mean, this is an area of the world, Tyler and listener, where like the biodiversity is, other than like the Galapagos Islands or something, it's so rich.
Almost like another Amazon type.
I mean, exactly, man. Many creatures, so many like, I mean, they're still discovering creatures in the jungles of Southeast Asia like every year.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting too because this reserve and this area, well, there's other creatures with similar stories. One that we've kind of briefly talked about before is the Orang Pendek, which is in Indonesia. And then like even like the Yeren in China.
Yep.
Here's something neat that I found. So in 1932, there was this article written about the Orang Pendek. And the Singapore Press, basically, that's where it came out. It wrote in detail about these creatures, and it was called The Mysterious Jungle Races of Sumatra, Giants and Pygmies. And it was released July 19th, 1932.
Wow.
Now, just marinate on that for a second, man. 1932, man. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is far before...
Are you talking about like Patty?
Yeah,
like the Patterson Gimlin.
Like 30 plus years, right? Before Patterson Gimlin. But of course not before like gold prospectors saw Bigfoot up in the Valley of the Headless Men.
Oh yeah.
Hear more about the Valley of Headless Men in That Would Be Rad, Season 1, Episode 41.
Let me pull up this 1932 article.
Hey, real quick, while you're doing that, how tall did you say this one was?
So some have said that it was like 6 foot tall.
Like, so the monkey man, that's the one you're talking about? Because like what you were saying, like with the pygmy thing, the Orang Pendek is like, I think a lot of people believe that it's like a ground sloth, I think, that could have gone extinct or whatever. Because it's like really small. It's like 3 feet tall.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
Yeah. And there's like a bunch of different, apparently too, like Japanese soldiers during World War II that had survived kind of wild areas and set up like little temporary camps in mainland Malay, kind of talked about sightings of some sorts of creatures. Now, I wasn't able to find that in writing, but I did find, no joke, the actual article from 1932.
Oh, man.
And so this one is more about the Orang Pendek, but we can kind of, let's just for a second, assume that in some way, because of the geographic location, these are somewhat related. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So it says, this is the title of the article, "Mysterious Jungle Races of Sumatra, Giants and Pygmies, Guard Swine and Have Their Heels in Front." Not sure what that means. Let's dig in. The story of the so-called Orang Pendek and in parentheses it says pygmy, shot recently at Rokan in Sumatra. What the? Is this article saying that they shot one?
Whoa.
Oh, let's keep going. Shot recently at Rokan in Sumatra has given rise to comment in the Sumatra vernacular papers, one of which gives particulars of other legendary jungle people in Sumatra. These, according to the people of the Menang Kambua, may be divided into five classes. The Orang Lubu, or Kubu, the Orang Pendek, or Lichi, Si Bigwa, Mawas, and Baksaksa, which means giants. The following particulars of these strange beings are given. Man, dude, this is crazy. We're about to dive into each one of those. This is neat. Orang Lecho. They didn't say that before, but we're going to keep on going.
Where did that one come from?
The existence of Orang Lubu or Kubu is well known. They are found in the territories of Jambi and Pelembang and on the boundary of Sumatra, basically. Mm-hmm. In former days, they were also found in the western part of Sumatra, that is, in the forests of Rao and Bukit Gindeng. A lot of names here. Orang Lubu never live in one place permanently. It is their habit to wander about. They possess a language, customs, and manners of their own. Some of them have acquired a knowledge of rice planting and associate themselves with farmers, but they do not know how to select their foods. In the matter of dress, they imitate the farmers, owing to their constant association with the latter. Whoever visits a hut of Orang Lubu must shout from afar, Saniki Sanak, which means, my brethren, my brethren. If he acts in this way, he will be welcomed by them, but if otherwise, he might receive injury from them. It might be that the Orang Lubu are one of the original inhabitants of Sumatra.
Wow, that's cool.
As life is becoming harder and harder, these people are forced to go and live on the countryside. And as their life is not properly looked after, their number is decreasing. Just real quick on that one. It's kind of like and maybe it's just my lack of knowledge here, but that's kind of one of the first times that I've ever really thought about a more like nomadic living, I guess, approach for these types of creatures, you know? I mean, I guess primates and stuff kind of do that, but for the most part, they set up like seasonal base of operations kind of, right? I mean,
but I wonder if they're saying that more in a way of like, you know, since this thing is so human-like, you know, because it went into like some of the speech and stuff, like I wonder if they're saying that's like an extremely nomadic behavior for a more human type animal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But for like other primates, like,
yeah,
you know.
For the most part, I think like when they're describing Orang Lubu, they might actually be referring to like more like pygmy type
people, like,
because they didn't really like describe them as being like, I don't know.
Well, the Orang Pendek is like covered in hair and.
Yeah.
You know.
Interesting.
Which, by the way, I made a mistake earlier when I said that the Orang Pendek was the one that was. A lot of people thought was a ground sloth. That is actually the Mapinguari from Brazil. I just had to clarify.
Yeah, what I've read about the Orang Pendek is that, like, basically, there's a lot of the information about this and these creatures kind of differs from account to account. Like, you'll find some stuff online specifically about the Pendek that is more. Yeah, they're smaller in stature. Mm-hmm. You know, questionably, you can almost like start to see, especially with like these that this guy's kind of describing, these like more like pygmy, primitive sort of tribes of people that live in the deep, deep forests. For somebody that's like a Westerner or coming from a, you know, European country and then kind of seeing these folks for the first time, they may think of them as like, you know, wild, sort of like, I think about like an old, Little Rascals,
like a
black and white episode. Yeah, like the Wild Man of Borneo and that kind of thing.
Although it does say that, because I'd heard obviously of the Orang Pendek, but one of the things about it though that keeps sort of popping up is it says that like they were so strong though that they could uproot full trees and break rattan vines,
yeah,
which I guess are probably pretty substantial. But so I don't know. There's like these sort of feats about it that lead me to believe that it's something a little more than like just, you know, like a pygmy or like a short person.
Yeah.
Which is funny because that's what orang pendek actually like means. It means short person or little man.
Yeah. So orang lecho, it says orang leche, well, I changed it there, right in the same sentence, were found in the western part of Sumatra. And they were found by people who went into the forest in search of rubber.
Mm.
And they are apparently fond of living in the thick forest with plenty of streams. They fear human beings very much. They are short and possess a language of their own. They speak at a terrible speed, he says. They eat fruits and also fish. They are sometimes found catching fish in the streams in the forests. Whenever they see a human being, they will shout, "Darenka, Darenka," which probably means, I love that assumption, a human being, a human being. when they hear this warning note from their friends, they immediately fly into the forests and are never found.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, imagine if we are talking about like a Sasquatch or Bigfoot type, you know, entity, if you will. I mean, imagine the hiding ability of one that's like 8 to 10 feet tall, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so now you have one that's like anywhere from like 2.5 to like 4 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that you would never find that thing.
Yeah. I mean, not to mention like, I'm not going after it. This thing's
speaking. Oh, no.
And this is another concept that I never really thought about. You know, like you hear about like the, like in the Sierra Sounds tapes. You know,
oh, yeah.
That
samurai chatter.
Samurai chatter and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of an interesting concept to think about. Like, okay, let's say these creatures do exist and they're located in different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And just like we are as humans, separated by like vast oceans or land.
Mm-hmm.
We have our own dialects and languages and all that. So would these, if they're capable of making a language, they would also, you know? And so that idea is something that I never really thought about, and it's kind of cool.
Yeah, the language thing to me has always just been, I don't know, I think it's so fascinating because it really does add like a human element to it. You know, it's like, I think your hardcore, like flesh and blood, like, you know, Sasquatch researchers are like, oh no, it's, you know, this upright hominid. It's probably an offshoot of Gigantopithecus. It's definitely an ape. But to me, it's like, once you involve like these accounts and this stuff goes, I mean, almost in all of them, you'll hear this like certain like speech patterns or certain like, you know, ways of communication, whether it be like wood knocks and like stuff like that. It's like, to me, that adds like that human element, you know, into the scenario. And it's like, okay, we're no longer dealing with like just a random like ape, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's wild, man. Let me...
wild man, there it is.
All right, let me read some of these other descriptions because then it gets kind of cool. So this one is called the Sea Bagua. People say that the sea bagua are one of the species of orang pendek. They are of a retiring disposition and prefer to lead a lonely life. Mm. They work as guardians or shepherds of swine. They live in jungles, having ponds where swine-like living. According to old hunters, any swine that is under guardianship of the sea bagua will never be caught, no matter how good your hounds are. For the swine will follow the swift flight of the sea bagua into the thickest part of the forest. Their skin is the same as that of the leche. They are about the height of a child of 3 or 4 years of age. So there you go. Wow. That's some more like smaller.
Mm-hmm.
This one's called the malas. According to the people of Minga Kabua, the malas are not the same as the orang pendek. The malas are a type of orang outang. And their body features exactly resemble those of a human being. Their height is the same, blah, 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 blah. Oh, weird. Listen to this. The differences are between them and a human that they do not know how to clothe themselves and their feet are turned backward, i.e. the heels are in the front and the toes are pointing backwards.
That's such a, that's like a, I think that's like a Japanese
thing. They will show fight. They will, I don't know what show fight means, but in 1932, I guess that meant they'll fight you. If interfered with by human beings, they're very clever at throwing stones, which, you know, that's something that is relatively common with Bigfoot.
Sadness, yeah, the rock apes. And,
yeah.
So real quick, just to clarify, I'm a little confused.
So like all of these, to kind of bring it back, all of these creatures mm-hmm. are thought to be potentially what the creature is that's seen in Bukittima.
Okay.
That we, you know, call either the Singapore Monkey Man or the Singapore, you know, Bigfoot or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what happened. And, you know, I think I said earlier, I think I was wrong. I think one of the first reports potentially came back in 1805, which was before the colonial British discovery of Singapore. Mm-hmm. And it was like a Malaysian elder who claimed to have seen an upright walking monkey-faced creature in that area.
Mm. And so he, the monkey man kind of falls into the umbrella of like the Orang Pendek.
Yeah.
And like
those types of creatures. And that article specifically is kind of just illustrating that there are various maybe subspecies or maybe some like kind of blurry / gray area in between all of that, you know, whether it's pygmy humans that are living deep within the jungles and a creature that also does, and maybe they're learning from one another. You know, the last one that this article kind of talked about was this creature that may even know how to build houses.
Man, that's amazing.
We haven't really talked about this part about Bigfoot on our show before, but, you know, there are reports and people, you know, you can find this online and stuff where people have found like potential Bigfoot homes and things where they go out into the woods for a hike and they see this like strangely built kind of shelter area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are thinking it's like a Bigfoot kind of, what's the word I'm looking for, man? Not nest, but.
You're talking about like the tree structures and stuff? Like the.
Yeah.
It almost looks like if you can imagine like a teepee without the cloth.
Exactly. Yep.
Actually, man, my family went camping and I'm always a little dubious because it is one of those things that it's just kind of, I mean, like, you know, when we were kids and stuff, it's like, they're fun to like build. You just kind of stack trees on themselves, you know, and then eventually you just get thicker and thicker.
Yeah.
But like, man, we did run across one time that was like massive. And I mean, I didn't want to just come straight up and be like, oh, that's 100%, you know, a Bigfoot, you know, den or whatever. But I mean, you do see a lot of those, you know, we're talking like full size trees, you know, stacked on top of each other.
Like big enough to where it would be extremely, mm-hmm. not impossible, but pretty darn close to impossible for a single man to, and I don't mean single because, you know, he's down on his luck and doesn't have to. I'm talking about like just one person stacking these things on top of each other.
Yeah. Which I wonder, you know, the, like I said before about like, they're kind of known for like being able to like uproot like trees. I mm-hmm. wonder if that ties into that. I wonder if that's the source of that, you know, that part of the legend.
Well, here's something else that's interesting about this monkey man. So apparently there's this group of, they're called the Night Raiders, okay? And they're a group of explorers who investigate various locations around Singapore in the dark at night.
God, okay? That's awesome.
And apparently, back in 2007, 2008, they had several sightings of the Singapore Bigfoot or the Bukittima Monkey Man. And they said that using some quote-unquote paranormal equipment that they had, mm-hmm. they were able to capture a couple of split seconds of this creature.
Man, that's cool.
And we'll kind of include that.
Now, is this like here. Team that does this? Are they out of Singapore or are they?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
They're the Night Raiders.
I mean, that's really cool.
It says, the Bukit Timah monkey man, commonly abbreviated as BTM or BTMM, is a creature said to inhabit Singapore, chiefly in the forested Bukit Timah region. The creature is often cited as a forest-dwelling hominid or primate and is also accounted for being immortal. Mm. However, its exact identity remains unknown and its existence disputed.
Wow.
Documentation of the BTM is sparse and scattered. The creature is largely considered a product of local lore. And even, it kind of talks about how, like, some folks even kind of maybe think that it might even be a djinn.
Oh, man. Now
so
you're talking.
We'll post the photos of what they're saying are photos of this creature kind of peeking around this tree, and I'm going to show them to you right now.
Hold yeah, on, please.
Just one second. Pew.
Whoa.
That's creepy, right? Now, the hard part about modern technology is, and you know, man, as a graphic designer, how relatively easy it would be to create a, a photo hoax, basically, a fake photo of a creature. I don't know what to think about this one.
Yeah. Well, I will say this as a graphic designer, it is actually harder to, you know, because the photo is like super low res. I'm sure it was probably a trail cam. And it's actually harder to sort of integrate your, you know, if I were to put like a Bigfoot in there in like a low res photo, it's actually harder to do that than like a, you know, high res, super sharp photo. At least in my experience, to make it look sort of legit, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, so, I guess maybe you just like, I don't know the technique, but just like copy until the copy becomes so distorted overall.
I mean, in theory, but it's a lot harder to do that than, I mean, you could throw in like Gaussian blurs and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, it looks, yeah, I'm on the fence, man. I'm 50-50 on this because it definitely looks creepy. Like,
yeah. It's weird, no matter what. And at the end of the day, look, here's the thing. And I don't know if you want me to talk a little bit more in depth of Orang Pendek.
Yeah, man, while we're on it,
I mean, might as well, right?
I mean, should this just be like a partial Orang Pendek show?
Yeah, I think so, maybe.
Yeah, okay.
So Orang Pendek is also kind of known as the little man of the Sumatra jungle. Mm-hmm. And according to tradition, the first recorded sighting of Orang Pendek dates back all the way to 1295 when Marco Polo saw it on one of his expeditions to the island, Sumatra.
All right, here's the thing. Real quick, we've talked about this before, but there is nothing cooler to me and you than having these like accounts come from like historical figures. Like,
oh my
that
gosh.
Is amazing.
No
man.
Kidding, man. I mean, like that, I don't know. It's just so much cooler than, oh, I found it on Reddit.
Right,
you know,
right.
Because, again, it's not because Reddit sucks or whatever, or, 2chain.
8chain, 4chain.
It's just that there's zero barrier of entry, and it's so easy for, like, a random thought to just catch fire, and then next thing you know, everybody's like, oh, man, this is real,
you know? Right,
and that
right.
just sucks about the internet. Yeah. Okay, but this is from, like, I've got a book in my hand right now.
Whoa.
I'm looking at, it's printed in, you know, ink.
Mm-hmm.
There's no changing it. You know,
mm-hmm.
and it's talking about this now.
Well,
I will say that I
want
to, yeah, true. I want to kind of cross-reference this and maybe go back and read that Marco Polo book that I have and see if he mentions this. But anyhow, in 1916, Dr. Edward Jacobson wrote in a Dutch scientific journal of his encounter with one of these creatures. Mm-hmm. Since Dr. Jacobson's sighting, there have been many accounts of people seeing the Orang Pendek. Yeah, like you said, many witnesses describe it as being about 5 feet tall and being covered with short, dark hair, which is a little different than the Singapore one.
Mm-hmm.
The Singapore one, you know, is said to have gray hair, but hey, look, man, maybe it was an old one. Maybe it was grandpa.
I mean, I think that's totally a possibility, you know?
Yeah. I mean, do monkeys get gray when they get old, though?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, they start getting gray. In fact, I just read an article a while back talking about, I probably should have looked into this before, but I said it. But I think it's the Kentucky Goat Man.
Mm-hmm.
Is sort of a cryptid. And a lot of people are starting to think now that, like, that whole thing wasn't a goat man at all, but an actual like aging, graying Bigfoot, which is pretty cool.
That is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally think that's possible. But also,
we'll return after these messages.
Something out there waiting for us. And it ain't no dead.
Hey, this is Bryce Johnson from the Bigfoot Collectors Club, and you're listening to Tyler and Woody on That Would Be Rad, because that is rad.
I do think that there's, you know, you have like albino accounts of these things. Mm-hmm. You have, but, and then, you know, you look into like the Yeti and they're, you know, they have white fur.
Yeah.
So I think
it's going to be environmental.
Yeah, I do too.
Just like regular, you know, creatures and animals. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's awesome. And again, it goes back to what we say time and time again, which is if these things were discovered in nowadays, mm-hmm. it would be less believable. Mm-hmm. But because like people all around the world at a time when communication was much harder to just travel the world like that, all these people are having all these different experiences with creatures that are similar. And so to me, that gives it more sort of credence. But,
totally. Yeah.
It says that it's definitely bipedal. Its arms are proportioned more like that of a human, though, rather than the extended arms of the ape.
Mm.
Most remarkably, the orang pendek have been heard conversing with one another in some unintelligible language. Oh, wow. Debbie Martyr, former editor of a London newspaper, went in search of the elusive Sumatran ape man and returned in March 1995. The whole time she was on the plane, she was listening to Definitely Maybe by Oasis. Mm. I'm just kidding. That's not in the book. She had numerous consistent eyewitness accounts of the orang pendek and plaster casts of its footprints. She stated that she even saw the creature for herself on three different occasions.
Wow.
She remarked that he is wonderfully camouflaged. If he freezes, you can't see him.
Yeah.
Also, he prefers Oasis over Blur. Just kidding. She didn't say that either.
Dude, it's synchronicity abounds. And again, I hate to derail you here, but I literally was just watching this video earlier this morning about, do you know that song 2, which is arguably Blur's most
biggest
hit?
Yeah. Well, the U.S. hit, yeah.
You know that it was a total joke? They made the entire song from his vocals just being like literally like your reference vocals to, and it broke down like so you could hear like the vocals isolated. Mm-hmm. It was recorded so sloppy that like the guitar is actually louder than the vocals, like as far as the bleed.
Man.
But it was a total joke, and they were like, okay, we're gonna do this song. And we're just going to make up words and make it silly and make it really messy and show the labels as like a joke. And the label, you know, I'm sure the A&R guys mm-hmm. came in. They played it for him and they were like, this is a hit.
I mean, it is so catchy. And it's so funny to me that like, well, first, let me say this. During the Oasis Blur feud, I was Team Oasis all the way, but I still liked Blur. Okay.
Yeah.
But what's funny to me is them describing, oh, this is us being silly. Because if you're not familiar with Blur other than that song, go back into their previous albums and it's just like, boys that like girls. It's like way more pop. I mean, way more poppy. And so when they released this song, it was like, whoa, man, this is really cool.
Yeah.
And so like,
I mean,
that whole album has some really cool stuff too, like Beetlebum and like there's some really good
but nothing
country sad ballad. Nothing sounds like that. Yeah.
So, and that was, to me, that was the disappointing thing because it was sort of like when I heard song 2, I was like, man, this is badass. It's almost like a garage rock type, post-punk kind of like weird, like you didn't really know what it was, but then none of the other stuff sounds even close, you know?
So. Yeah, it's not like that heavy, but there's some really good songs in there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
I'm still a Stereophonics guy.
Oh, I love Stereophonics. Yeah. I mean, we could go on and we could do an entire episode. Maybe we'll do that in the Patreon one day where I just go straight through my Britpop.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Like
man.
Recommendations mm-hmm. and do like a curated history of my love for Britpop.
Mm.
So back to Debbie Martyr. She said the first time that she sighted the Orang Pendek, she admitted that she was so shocked that she didn't take a picture. She hadn't really expected to see something so contrary to what she had expected, a bipedal, erect primate. She remarked that the Orang Pendek is so well camouflaged because its colors correspond to those of the forest floor. Mm. Beige, tawny, rust red, yellow, tan, and chocolate brown. If the creature remains immobile, she said, it was impossible to see. In October 29th of 2001, the London Times reported that an early analysis of hair samples taken by a British expedition to the mountain rainforest near that area in Sumatra did not appear to have come from any known primate in the area.
Mm, that's cool.
All in, like, nobody really knows. And here's the thing about these jungles, too. While there are all kinds of different animals, potentially these included, there's also, like, just... You ever heard of the Sumatran tiger?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, like, you're not... This isn't really, like, an area that you just kind of want to break out the old magnifying glass and take a leisurely stroll through.
Right.
This is, like, a dense, tropical rainforest
yeah.
with creatures that are so poisonous, you know, you'll die the second they bite you.
Instantly, yeah.
I mean, tigers that'll just eat you alive. You know, I've told that story before when my dad was on Sumatra and just running through the jungles keep in shape. And the people were like, dude, you cannot do that. There's tigers everywhere. So you're talking about an area that's super dangerous and there's all sorts of theories. Ultimately, no one really knows what these creatures are. There's some theories that think that, like, maybe it's some sort of hybrid species.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just an evolved species that has just been able to survive in that region.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. It's super cool. And any excuse for me to kind of talk about that side of the world and reminisce about those jungles and the just being overseas, just I couldn't wait to kind of talk about that. But either the Orang Pendek or this Bukit Timah monkey man, either way you slice it, there's something in those jungles that people are seeing.
Oh, yeah, man.
And it's just fascinating that even to this day, we still don't know what it is.
Yeah, I'm really glad, too, that because once you brought up, like, Singapore, and my mind immediately went to the Orang Pendek. So I'm super glad that you know, we kind of combined the two for this episode. And I like the possible, like, overlap. Now, the thing that I'm sort of wondering or proposing even is from that article, you said, like, 1936 or...
1932, yeah.
32. I mean, it sounds to me like they're sort of explaining or sort of breaking down, like, three different things.
Well, it's almost like... hold on, let me get back to it. Takes a second because first my computer has to download a virus and then I'm able to access it. So, you know, hey, they're really 1, 2, 3. There's like four different main ones that they're describing
yeah.
in this article.
I mean, but it sounds like they kind of vary. So, I mean, honestly,
oh, yeah.
I could see, I mean, you know, I mean, obviously I think for most of us, especially Americans, we think of the Amazon as being like the jungle, like, you know, this
yeah.
super thick, dense, you know, wild kind of jungle. And so, I mean, I think it's completely still within the realm of possibility that you, I mean, maybe they are pygmies, maybe like the pygmies mm-hmm. of, was it New Zealand that the discovery a while back?
No, I think it was like close to the islands of Indonesia.
Oh, really? Wow, I was thinking it was New Zealand. Yeah, I mean, maybe there's that. Maybe they were a tribe that just kept going further and further, you mm-hmm. know, into the jungle as like civilization kind of happened. And then maybe there's also, I mean, heck, for all we know, man, maybe they are pygmies, but they're so good at like hiding because you got to think your natural like defense. I mean, the smaller you are in the jungle, the more dangerous it is. So. For all we know, anytime they're out, you know, sort of traveling or hunting or any of that stuff. I mean, maybe they're just wearing these like full sort of ghillie suits. Mm-hmm. You know, now I don't think that completely explains away like the red eyes, like mm-hmm. you were talking about with yeah. the monkey man. But I think there could be several different things happening. The second thing my mind went to was, and I kind of want to do an episode on its own about this, so I'm not going to get real deep into it, but the Vietnamese rock apes. Have you ever heard of those?
I don't know much about them,
no. It's pretty fascinating. And again, I want to do a full episode, but like they were kind of like, there's some sightings with them having the red eyes. And I wonder if some of that is like a type of eye shine, or is it straight up illuminating? Because if it is like a self-illuminating thing, that's also kind of fascinating, because it sort of, to me at least, it sort of blends back into that like Asian, very like supernatural, you know, tinged, you know, accounts of these things. But the thing that is interesting about the rock apes is like they would, you know, obviously they're known to like throw rocks at like the soldiers in Vietnam. And there's even like several accounts where they would throw back like live grenades.
What?
Which is pretty fascinating. Yeah. And there's like other accounts where like, I mean, you'll read stories where like, you know, somebody will happen upon like a guy that like both of his arms are completely like ripped off and like
Jeez.
Super strong, super, you know, pretty aggressive, you know. But I mean, you got to think about it. Like, okay, take this setting that we're talking about, like with the Orang Pendek and the Monkey Man, and you know, now you have like soldiers like shooting and throwing grenades and like basically having warfare in your jungle home, and it's like, all right, enough of this. I'm gonna attack. You know, so it kind of makes sense that like they would turn aggressive. You know,
well, it kind of reminds me. Well, there's a couple things that it reminds me of. First, I'm sure I mentioned this before to you, but I waiting for the bus in Indonesia one time, I got slammed right in the face. This monkey that was on a power line, like threw a freaking fruit seed and hit me right in the mouth.
Jeez.
And yeah, it was, that was awesome. And then thank goodness it wasn't poop.
Yeah.
And then it also reminds me of the newer Planet of the Apes sort of trilogy, right? Like intelligent apes, and all of a sudden they like start to adapt the weapons. First, it starts with primitive weapons, and then they steal the guns from the humans, and now they're using them crudely, but they're still using them, right? And so it's like, man, I mean, just that kind of thing happening in the jungles. And here's something else to keep in mind, folks, like in this area. So Indonesia, for example, is, I think, said to have almost 18,000 or more islands, 6,000 of which are inhabited, right?
Wow.
And so it wasn't too long ago that, you know, you can see some footage of like, you know, the helicopter flying over one of these islands, and it's like this dude that's painted head to toe, and like one is like painted, and this might have been Brazil. I could be kind of mixing them up, but like, and I thought it was like, anyhow, there's like a primitive
are you talking
tribal
about the
guy.
The link like, that you sent me? Like those, that crazy tribe.
No, not those. We're going to dive into that.
Holy cow.
Man. But that was in the 1920s, right?
Yes. Which, by the way, dude, I need to send you this link. I found on the Internet Archive, there's a book that's like, you know, $600. You can't find anywhere.
Yep.
But they had that full book, and it's an entire book on like
photographs, right?
Just all photographs, dude. It's
like
amazing.
They're so crazy looking that I didn't even believe they were real.
Yeah, me too.
You know,
I thought they were just modern. Like,
yeah. So there's still places on Earth, basically, where human beings have never seen a helicopter, or you know, held an iPhone in their hand, and are still like terrified by, you know, people that aren't in their tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like some either movie or documentary that I was watching where this guy is trying to like communicate with these. I think they are cannibals. And he brings the camera, and it took them so long for them to like come up to him, and they were like super scared, and they're like yelling stuff, and he would try to like give them things and stuff, and it was just super interesting. And so places like this still exist in the world, and it's really hard to kind of wrap your mind around in 2023 when we're recording this that is real.
Yeah,
but you know, it is. And so it could be, to me, a lot of these accounts could be a kind of a mixture of a lot of things. First, if it's someone of like European descent or something coming here in the early, you know, I don't know, naval period, they could mix it all. They could mistakenly sort of identify a pygmy tribe as like some sort of creature that they're not sure of, you know?
I mean, and especially if they're camouflaged, they're basically wearing like a ghillie suit.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It could appear like more animalistic, you know?
Right, right.
But the fact that things are still being seen, potentially.
Yeah, that's you know? The interesting thing. Yeah.
Super cool.
This is a little off topic, but talking about those tribes, I'm pretty sure I mentioned it before on the show, but I definitely want to do a full show on the concept of like what's called cargo cults. Have you heard about this?
No.
I mean, I think we've talked about it. It's basically this idea. There's one that's kind of like a sort of the more widely known one, but it's basically like, you know, this tribe that they didn't discover until, I mean, maybe like the 80s. And basically what had happened was a plane, I think it was a U.S. plane, went down, maybe it was a British plane, went down, you know, crashed into the jungles. And they discovered it, you know, it would have been back in the 60s or 50s or, you know, whenever. And, you know, when they were discovered, like in the, I can't remember if it's 70s, 80s, mm-hmm. When they were discovered, people were like, whoa, what is going on here? And they had like, they were doing like their art was basically like the, and again, I can't remember if it's like the Ministry of Defense or if it was like the USAF, like Air Force, like they had those symbols. And they realized that like, oh, like these
people came from the sky.
They came from the sky.
Yeah, I remember this.
They were our gods. And so instead of a cross or whatever, they basically put the emblem that was on the wing of the plane. And that was basically their religion. It's just,
yeah.
That's so fascinating.
Dude, they kind of, it is very fascinating. They kind of pay homage to that too in one of the newer sort of Star Trek movies. They go to save this planet and they know that they have to like take some, I don't know the short version of the story is essentially they take something, these primitive beings on this planet are like chasing after them. Mm-hmm. And then the Enterprise just like busts through the ocean. It was hiding because they are not supposed to let these primitive people see it and not let them know that they interfered essentially with the planet to save it. And then they escape death, the crew, they beam on board of the Enterprise and it flies off. And then you just see this like primitive guy like drawing the shape of the Enterprise and everybody like bowing down. And so it's that same concept, man,
that's
of
cool.
like,
yeah,
you know, all of a sudden something falls from the sky.
Yeah.
And you're thinking like, oh, this is the gods. You know, what's that movie? The Gods Must Be Crazy, right? Isn't that like from the,
it's
I don't know if it was
so
the late 70s
long.
Or early 80s.
I think it's 80s.
Something fall, like I think a Coke bottle or something falls from the sky and then like, I don't remember it. Clay will know.
I mean, yeah, Clay will definitely know. It's almost, you know, kind of like Star Wars 2 where, you know, C-3PO, it's like, oh, he's a god because he's, you know, gold. And, yeah, that's really fascinating. I still think that there could be a lot of different things playing out in this. I've never heard, which is interesting because you were able to find it in a 1932 like paper, but I'd never heard of like the different like offshoots, like the Aram Leche, and then like those. I think that's pretty
it's really cool.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, any excuse for me to like talk about my old stomping grounds is it's hard for me to resist. So I hope you enjoyed that.
Real quick, is you know like the terminology like born with a silver spoon in your mouth? Does that apply to like Asian countries, like born with a silver pair of chopsticks?
Or? Yeah, I'm not sure.
And also,
it's
did
funny.
You, did you?
My kids have been getting into
stuff
like both of them eat like whenever we eat, like they love chopsticks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, if we go eat, you know, Japanese or anything like that, they even have their own pair here at home.
Oh yeah.
But one thing, and you might not know this, but traditionally in Indonesia, they don't use chopsticks.
They eat with their hands.
That's correct.
Yep.
And so I was telling my kids, you know, like, you know, you go to a traditional Indonesian restaurant and they've got like this little small bowl filled with like lemon water that you like dip mm-hmm. your hands in first and all this. And they're like, what? Really? And I was like, yeah. And both of them are like, that kind of sounds cool. And I'm like, yeah, well, stomach bugs are aplenty. Okay. Yeah,
my wife would not be down with that.
Mm-mm. And for the most part, like, you just ask them for a fork. I mean, everything's so like westernized now
mm-hmm.
that, you know, there's places to go and things to eat that are sort of newbie friendly kind of.
Yeah. 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 That is one of the things that, you know, as a dad of two young kids also, I'm always like hesitant. Like Courtney would be like, man, we should go here. And it's like, I just don't know, for two kids that only eat PB&Js and maybe chicken tenders occasionally. It's like, I just don't know how difficult this trip is going to be, you know.
To where now?
Like just anywhere, pretty
yeah,
much.
It's going to be difficult.
Yeah. Well, dude, it has been a pleasure. I have had an awesome time hearing about this stuff. You definitely did surprise me with a lot of stuff that I'd never heard before. So bravo to you.
Thank you.
If you guys, the listeners, would like to hit us up online, the majority of everything happens over on Instagram. Feel free to jump in the comment section. If you want to tell us a story or your own personal, you know, paranormal account, feel free to shoot us a DM, or if it's more long form, head on over to thatwouldberadpod@gmail.com. Or even better, if you would like to tell your own story, I mean, you could send a voice memo to our email as well, but just thatwouldberadpodcast.com, which has like the, you know, the feature, which is my favorite thing, where you can basically tell your story, you know, directly to the site, which is really awesome. And we would love to hear those stories. We have several stockpiled and, you know, we kind of try to save them for special occasions, but man, we love that kind of stuff. So if any of you guys have, you know, whether it's just urban legends, urban lore in your area to, you know, sort of folklore or, you know, cryptids in your area, just those like super obscure, like localized things, that's the stuff that we are obsessed with. And so feel free to shoot that over and, you know, we'll throw some sound design and some cool music behind it. And, or, you know, if you're not comfortable using your own voice, we totally understand. And either of us will read it and, you know, make it cool. But any of that stuff, we welcome. Get out there and tell a single friend about the show. It makes a huge difference. Give us a 5-star review if you have some extra time on your hands. Also, if you're not getting enough on this main feed and you gotta have a little more rad, head on over to Patreon and join the Rabbit Trail, which is our Patreon. It means a lot to us, and we really appreciate all of the support for you guys over on the Patreon. Mm-hmm. Woody, you got anything else?
I think that's about it, man.
All right, pal. Well, we love you, we appreciate you, and as always,
be rad.
That's the way it goes. My favorite song on the radio. The song.
some sunshine. You were already dead, for you became a ghost. You always said our future would be a parade of flowers, but now all that's left is a single rose. That's the way.
Hey, boys and girls, welcome back to your favorite podcast, That Would Be Rad, the podcast that majors in 80s and 90s. Oh, God. Hey, pals, welcome back to your favorite podcast, That Would Be Rad, the podcast that majors in 80s and 90s nostalgia, comic culture, all thing paranormal. God almighty.
All thing paranormal.
I am your captain now.
Man, that was a heck of a reference pool there.
Left field peninsula.